and welcome back. You're tuned in to the HBCU Nation Radio Show, and I'm your host, Anthony Ray. Glad to have you join the broadcast today. And we're blessed to have joining us for this segment our good friend, Dr. Charlie Nabbs. Dr. Nabbs is a transformational servant leader, a motivational speaker, and consultant with expertise in higher education. He has more than 40 years of experience and leadership in student access, retention, and graduation, institutional effectiveness, and strategic planning. The former chancellor of universities in North Carolina, Indiana, and Michigan, Dr. Nabbs serves as a board member for leading educational associations and foundations across the country. And today, he and I are going to talk about a range of issues relating to our beloved HBCUs. Dr. Nabbs, as always, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm delighted to be here as always, and I think
hey, Doc.
Hello.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, right when you said I'm delighted to always, and all of a sudden you just dropped out. So you're there now?
Yes, I'm here now.
Okay, we'll fix that. Okay, let's pick up right where you just said. I'm right there. Okay, again.
Okay, gotcha.
Dr. Nabbs, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, and it's a good way to kick off the fall season from my perspective, so this is really good.
Absolutely, absolutely. As always, we're thrilled to have you. Let's say that we're just talking here right off the air. I have been at this now for 6 years and want to appreciate all that you do on behalf of just your full-time advocacy on behalf of our nation's HBCUs. Thank you so much for all that you do and to help us to be able to just have a level of focus and awareness on things that we can do and do those things in a way that are effective and that would help us to be able to strengthen and be a blessing and just sustain our efforts, if you will, in growing enrollment and making sure that we're attending to those retention issues and fundraising issues and all the things that are relevant to make sure that our schools are not just surviving but thriving.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what it's really all about, Anthony, mm-hmm. and that is thriving, not simply surviving.
Exactly.
Because I think we went through a period there where survival was really the high priority for many of our institutions. But I think we in that thriving mode, not increasingly more HBCUs. And what I'm hoping is that, and I'm optimistic, really optimistic, that we'll be able to build on many of these initiatives that are underway, not just at the two or three or four or five HBCUs, but beyond just the top 10. I guess that's the other way of saying it. You know, there are some institutions that always come in at the top 10, and we commend and celebrate their success. But then there's another 10, there's another 10, and another 10, another 10, because we have over 100 HBCUs. And so while we celebrate the success of the top 10 or the top 20, we need to make sure that we're equally as mindful of the opportunities and the challenges associated with those institutions that are not in the top 10.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, Dr. Nabbs, what I'm really excited about in terms of this particular discussion we're having today, we've asked you to take some time and to just give us an overview and grant us some perspective on what you see that's happening. Let's talk about some of the great stories that are out there and also some of the things that you may have concern with as it relates to HBCUs and the issues and matters that we face on the everyday matter. You know, you and I were talking before the show about some of the great stories out there, some of what we call, you refer to as the bright side, if you will. And let's kind of highlight some of those stories out there that are really have you excited and share with folk and some that are that they may be aware and some that are not. But in our effort for you and I in terms of being advocates, let's kind of talk about some of those great things that are happening on the bright side and why it matters.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do so. You know, and I've been monitoring the enrollment at HBCUs this fall, and I think that is the brightest story for me. Okay. because we're not only seeing enrollment increases at a few schools, we're seeing it at an expanded number of institutions. And I think that's really the bright side. At a time when the demographics are changing and perhaps fewer students in some instances are entering high school, entering college. And, of course, that's the good side. There are going to be some challenges that we'll talk about later. But I'm most encouraged, Anthony, by the increase. In some instances, we've had a doubling of the increase. We've had 25% increases at some institutions, 5%, 6%, 7% over a number of years. And so that's really, really a good thing, okay, in terms of getting more students choosing to enroll at our historically black colleges and universities. And when I see some of these racist kinds of tendencies play out in higher education, especially at some of our PWIs, you know, I want to believe that this is an issue, I know it's an issue, that students don't have to contend with at HBCUs. You don't have to prove that you belong at an HBCU. And so hopefully that HBCUs will even be able to attract more of our students to come back to these institutions. And I think we can do that as long as we provide a high quality, consistently high quality education that's undergirded by caring, a supportive culture, and all of those kinds of things. We're known for that, but we have to even do a better job. So the enrollment side is really good, okay? It's looking good, looking much better. The second area that causes me to conclude that things have improved significantly is when I look at the number of presidential and provost and dean's appointments that are occurring at our historically black colleges and universities, okay? And while I don't mean, and there's a risk of me missing someone when I name individuals, but I think I want to do that. I want to give a shout out to what I see as some really encouraging leadership, okay? You look at Kentucky State with Dr. Chris Brown. You look at the new leadership that's in place at Bowie State. You look at Wiley College. You look at Philander Smith, and they join a whole host of men and women who have recently transitioned into the presidency at some of our HBCUs. Okay, if you look at the Spelman, you look at Morehouse, you look at Howard. I mean, there's some really good, but also you look at Jarvis Christian. You look at Tuskegee Institute. So there are a number of institutions that are doing a really good job with their in their executive ranks, and that's another reason that I am really encouraged. We continue to face some governance issues, and we'll talk about that a little later. But a third reason I am really optimistic has to do with alumni giving, and I just want to raise to the attention of the listening audience something that I was just really, really impressed with. Of course, you know, we have the Tom Joyner Foundation that is doing a phenomenal job, and they've been doing it for a long time in highlighting this whole notion of giving to our HBCUs. And when the new president, Dr. Glover at Tennessee State University, new president of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, she listed support for HBCUs in her top five priorities. And she hadn't been in office very long, and she launched an initiative to raise $1 million in one day. And so some people may say, well, $1 million is not a lot of money. It is a lot of money, okay? But it's not just the amount of money, but it's an attitude, okay? And an awareness that we can be those agents of change with regard to our giving levels and so on and so forth, okay? And they met that goal. And, of course, that builds on the goals that had been achieved by her predecessor. The same is true for the AKA, for the Deltas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't mean to just single it out, but is a very recent
thing. Tell it. Yeah, absolutely.
That concluded. So that was the alumni giving. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The fourth reason for optimism, I think that HBCUs, thanks to programs like yours, and to a whole host of other outlets, are doing a fabulous job of helping institutions to tell the story, where it's not just a story of woe unto
right.
us,
right.
Okay? But rather here the really positive things, highlighting those positives that are occurring at HBCUs. I think institutions are doing a better job at that, okay, making better use of social media as but one example, bringing in alums who can talk with current students. They're just doing a better job of telling the stories. Now, what we have to do in all of these areas, we can't afford to rest on our laurels, okay? We have to say, how do we use these accomplishments of late, last 4 or 5 years, last year in particular, to sort of catapult us to another level of responsiveness, okay? But I have every reason to be optimistic, and it is my hope that we alums of HBCUs, the advocates of HBCUs, will really, really be responsive.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're tuned in to the HBCU Nation Radio Show, and I'm your host, Anthony Ray. Glad to have you join the broadcast today, and we're blessed to have with us joining for this segment our good friend and our very frequent guest, Dr. Charlie Nams. Dr. Nams has more than 40 years of experience in leadership in student access, retention, and graduation, institutional effectiveness, and strategic planning. The former chancellor of universities in North Carolina, Indiana, and Michigan, Dr. Nam serves as a board member for leading educational associations and foundations across the U.S. And even though he's retired, he's a full-time HBCU advocate. And we're just blessed that Dr. Nam is a frequent contributor to our broadcast. Dr. Nam, as always, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It is absolutely always good to be with you. And it seems that that broadcast hour passes quite quickly. Okay? And so I find myself saying, wow, there's more for
more,
us
the more to talk about. Exactly. That's what we're trying to do as frequent as possible. Exactly. That's a lot. And we appreciate that. And we're taking the time today to draw from your experience and your expertise and get some of your reflections and your thoughts on HBCU leadership and governance issues, and talking about some of that new blood that's coming out of the academy and that you're really excited about and we're all very excited about. And so let's continue in that vein again. And thank you for being with us today. Just to reflect upon your thoughts and your views on where we are and where we need to go, some of the great things that are happening in terms of things that you are very excited about in terms of what we've been able to accomplish. And you made note of the fact that we're doing a better job now of telling our story and getting out there with it and advocating on behalf of our nation HBCUs. And we're focusing upon the positive things that we do. And that's what we're all about. You're exactly right about promoting HBCU excellence, innovation, and sustainability. And so when you tune into this broadcast, you're going to hear about the great things that we're doing, the things that we're facing. We have challenges. We're going to talk about some of that. Amen. But we're glad to have you with us. With that. So,
you know, mm-hmm. Anthony, there's one other thing that I did not mention, and something that I track pretty closely, mm-hmm. and that is the number of HBCUs that are really have assumed a much more active role in the research arena.
Gotcha.
Okay? Mm-hmm. A more active role in the research arena and a more active role in aligning their curriculum with job placement opportunities for students and workforce development issues and needs on behalf of the employer sector. Mm-hmm. So if you look at Howard University West, okay. Mm-hmm. If you look at a lot of the work that's going on in North Carolina, A&T, Morgan State, Tennessee State, Benedict College, Fisk University, these institutions are really have come out. Many of them have been out there all the time.
Right, right.
But I think that we are getting a lot better coverage, as I said, some of these initiatives. And so I want to really give a shout-out and an appreciation for those faculty members who are really putting together successful proposals that really enable our colleges and universities to do a much better job in playing in the research arena, because that's where a lot of those dollars come from that enable our students to have experiences that will help them be better prepared for college, or be better prepared for graduate and professional schools, and will also enable our faculty members to do a better job of blending their teaching, their research, and their service. And so I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge this increasing role that faculty members are playing. They've always been known for teaching and mentoring and advising students. But this research, man, I tell you, that is that's really, really an encouraging thing that I'm seeing, not just with a few institutions, but with increasingly more
across
of them.
The board. That's awesome. And it's awesome to hear. And it's very important, you know, again, because that's what really ought to, that's our main focus, if you will, that we ought to really have. You're exactly right. And we're thrilled to see that happening. And again, shout out to all those faculty members across those great schools that are really leading the way there and doing a great job with that. Gosh.
And you know, Anthony, many of those faculty members have not just one or two students involved. They may have 8 or 10 or 12 students involved.
Right.
Just think about, just imagine, for example, the impact that that has on motivating students.
Exactly.
Okay, to see themselves as researchers and not just as consumers, okay, but people who are engaged in research, working on new discoveries that can help improve the quality of life for all people, but especially for ethnic and economically disenfranchised people historically, whether it be in health disparities, whether it be in education, et cetera, et cetera. So the research is more than just a word. It is really all about a culture and a kind of responsiveness and engagement, and that's really good. But look, can we move to this whole notion of challenges?
Sure, absolutely, okay? Absolutely.
Well, opportunities depend on one's perspective, okay?
Absolutely.
Go
right ahead along your line. And what are some of the challenges that you have taken note of that you are concerned about that we wanted to talk about today, and so that we of course are well aware of that. And as I said before, we there are challenges out there, and we have talk
there
about
are challenges
that.
That's
right.
And you know, Anthony, many of these challenges will impact historically Black colleges disproportionately.
Right.
I think they'll impact all higher education in some ways, but HBCUs probably disproportionately. Now, I believe in free college,
right.
Okay? But I see the free college movement as providing, and I support it, so
right.
don't misunderstand what I'm saying.
Sure,
it
sure.
all depends on how it is structured.
Right.
And so for the listening audience, there are two reports that I would encourage people to go online and look at and consider downloading them and so on and so forth. And one is a report that was undertaken by the Higher Education, IHEP, Institute for Higher Education Policy, Institute for Higher Education Policy, okay? I would encourage people to just take a good look at that report and really be educated about what the issues are.
Right.
The second report is one that was, and I don't have the exact title of either of these, but I've looked at them. The second report is one that was completed by Ed Trust, Education Trust, okay? And as you all know, Dr. John King is the president and CEO of Ed Trust, and Dr. Michelle Cooper is the president and CEO of IHEP, Institute for Higher Education Policy. So a lot of it depends on how these programs are structured, okay, whether they are last-dollar programs or not. And as was noted by IHEP, is that while tuition, it's good to have a focus on tuition, but there are a lot of other costs associated with college attendance and retention, okay? And they are what we call non-tuition costs, ranging everywhere from transportation to being able to maintain your household. I mean, there are bills, as we all know, that people have to pay. And so some of these programs do not help assist, do not assist the poorest students, the poorest students.
Right.
And so while I think we ought to embrace, you know, this whole notion of greater access and opportunity for enrollment, okay, I think we got to look at the fine print, OK? Okay. And I did a blog that you and I talked about several years ago, I guess in 2016, where I said, the devil is in the details. Okay. And so what people really need to do is to take a look at the details, okay, and not just be captivated by the notion of, quote, free.
A free college
because
tuition.
Because nothing is really free. Mm. There are costs associated with it, okay? So that's one. How are you going to pay for the program, the politics associated with them? I know the Tennessee Promise Program is cited frequently as being a really good model and so on and so forth. But let me give you an example of something that's really needed if we talk about free college. We're talking about summer bridge programs, okay? We know that students who participate in summer bridge programs have, just before going to college, have a much better chance of persistence than those who don't, okay? These support services that students have access to and so on and so forth. So free college, I see, as possibly having a particular impact on some of our private HBCUs, okay, because I think it's going to increase the competition in some ways, okay. So that's an opportunity then to move to what I see as this second real challenge going forward for HBCUs, and I call that competition for students, competition for students. And you know, Anthony, it's not competition from one between HBCUs. It's competition between HBCUs and PWIs and HSIs and a whole host of it, the proprietary schools. So there's this competition that is more than competition between our schools, the competition for students. Now, the thing that makes that one want to really be attentive to is that in this country we're seeing a change in the demographics, okay, where there are fewer Caucasian babies being born, okay, or if you look at the population, the demographics, there are disproportionate numbers of Black, Latino, Asians, and so on and so forth, who are in that college age group. And so PWIs are going to find themselves, we're going to find PWIs coming after those students much more aggressively and assertively than they have in the past. And the only way that we can, the best way to compete for HBCUs is to provide a high quality, hands-on, interactive experience, which means that we have to up our game. Saying that when HBCU will not be the deal filler. It's going to be the quality of the experience and our ability to offer competitive financial aid packages. Okay? And that's why we alums must step up to the plate.
There you go. Right.
And make sure that our alma maters have access to the dollars they need in order to attract the students we want.
The importance of building these endowment funds up.
So the competition for students. A third issue is growing loan indebtedness. Now, I read somewhere recently where the current indebtedness is approaching about $1.5 trillion or something like that. That's that big bubble that's waiting to burst.
Right,
Anthony.
Right.
Okay. And the reason that one is likely to have a disproportionate impact on us is because on HBCUs. Is because HBCUs already serve a disproportionate number of low-wealth students. I read somewhere recently where 90% of the students at HBCUs, upwards of 90%, receive some type of financial aid. Okay, and if you look at the Pell Eligibility Index, a disproportionate number of HBCU applicants and enrollees are Pell Grant recipients. Okay, and they're also recipients of loans, okay? So if you look at then, if you get a growing default rate, then that could jeopardize the institution's ability to participate, okay, in the loan program, okay? So it's loan indebtedness, the increases in loan indebtedness, and the potential increase in loan defaults, okay? Which has implications not only for the defaulter, but also for
the institution itself. Exactly.
Absolutely. Okay. we can't ignore that. So we got the free college impact, competition for students, the growing loan indebtedness, and then there's that whole issue of governance.
Wow.
Okay.
Let's see your leadership
and
governance.
We're not out of the woods.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing some positives at a number of institutions, and I think that's really good. And what we have to do then is to up our game in terms of strengthening the relationship between the executive leadership teams at HBCUs and our board members, okay? And we have to make sure that there's a stronger link and a relationship between the executives of our colleges and universities and those who appoint trustees. And that's true whether we talk about a church-affiliated institution, and it's true if we talk about an independent institution, and it's true if we talk about public institutions. We have to get the right people on the board in the right seats in order to raise the right questions, but not only just raise questions, but people who are in a position to be of assistance to our colleges and universities. And they can assist by not only making suggestions about what the institution ought to do, but using their network to help our colleges do what they need to do in order to be, in order to remain competitive and to increase their competitiveness. And it's all about relationships, Anthony. That's what it's about. Whether you talk about a PWI, an HBCU, an HSI, MSI, tribal college, it's all about collaborative relationships, okay? So despite these challenges, Anthony, I'm optimistic.
Wow.
I'm really optimistic because of what I'm seeing on the leadership front, on the governance front, as well as what alums are paying attention to. As opposed to perpetuating the negatives, I think they're doing a better job of perpetuating the positives.
Wow. And you have just really laid it all out for us in an incredible way to help give us a perspective. And gosh, we had a chance to talk about the bright side, about our challenges. And that's why we really are thrilled to have you as our frequent contributor. And you've been doing so now for 6 years. And we really appreciate that. Dr. Charlie Nems, he established Nems & Associates a few years ago. And it's a comprehensive higher education firm and providing consulting services in leadership and institutional effectiveness, strategic planning and academic program review, enrollment management and student success, diversity and inclusion, strategic communications, and you can find out more at charlienems.com. Dr. Nems, as always, thanks so much for your insight and for your advocacy. We appreciate all that you do, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all you all do, okay? And thanks to the men and women and alums out there who are doing it every day to advance the mission of our historical Black colleges and universities. We need that support today more than ever. Thank you so much, and have a good day.
You too. God bless.